Yes, it was really tricky sometimes, especially with the very little children. So sometimes I had children as young as 5 and they'd literally just stepped off the boat. And some of those children had actually lost their parents on the journey over. So when you worked that out, so when the children were playing and you worked out that that's what had happened, when you don't have a shared language, it's so hard to do all the nuances of how you might help a child deal with their grief and how you might help the students around them respond appropriately to that child. So you learn to be very animated and very a lot of non-verbals, and you know, there's such a basic thing, human touch and the warmth we can convey with our eyes, and those things became vital.
So, what were your expectations of Christmas Island, and how did they compare to what you found when you got there?
I didn't expect it to be so extraordinarily beautiful. Christmas Island is 60% national park, and one of my favourite memories is swimming out. So there's a place called the Drop Off, and you can swim out about 50 metres, and the ocean floor drops straight down 3 kilometres, and it's exhilarating. And so to, you know, be swimming back from that and see, you know, turtles swim past and sharks and huge plate corals bigger than me, it was like living next to a giant aquarium. And at the same time, you have these great big frigate birds that kind of look like pterodactyls flying overhead. And then as you pop your head up, the call to prayer would come over, because there were the Malay people were Islamic. And then you'd see the Navy escort an asylum seeker vessel in. So I just this extraordinary layering that I just find still so stimulating about that place. I didn't expect it to be so rich and complex.
Yeah, wow. And so what was life on the island like, and how much did the detention centre feature in that landscape and in that lifestyle?
What was so strange about Christmas Island is that it had two very different things going on. And so you had the detention centre, which was secretive and for the large part locked away from the community so that they didn't have to think about it. And then you had us living this incredibly privileged white lifestyle for those of us that were white, but also the Christmas population is about 60% Chinese and also the Malay community. But we lived this incredibly privileged lifestyle while other people were locked in the detention centre. And the federal government at the time funded a report that found 12 asylum seekers every day were trying to take their own lives or self-harming in the detention centre, while the rest of us were, you know, snorkeling around and drinking gin and tonics on our verandas. And it was just something I never really could come to terms with, especially in the work that I did and witnessing the pointless suffering that was happening even to little children. I found that really difficult. And because the government didn't consult with the community about what was happening, there was a lot of anger directed towards asylum seekers that really was about the government not consulting the community and not communicating with the community. And I found that prejudice really difficult to live with. And ultimately, that at the end of that year, at the end of 2011, that's why I decided to leave. Yeah.
So then you moved to the Cocos Islands.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? What was that change like?
It was extraordinary. I think it's only 900 k's between the islands, but you know, they may as well be on opposite ends of the earth. They're so different. So, you know, on Christmas Island, it's a this kind of volcanic mound, or it was a volcano that kind of thrusts 300 meters straight, you know, straight up into the air. Whereas on Cocos, you're about 2 meters above sea, and it's an atoll, so it's not one island. It's in this horseshoe formation. I think it's 26 islets that form it. And you have the Cocos Malay community on one island mainly, and the white community on another island. So you're much more separated from the local community in that way. But it was a completely different community, and the islandscape was so different, very much postcard perfect, you know, palm trees and white sandy beaches. And because there was only 90 white people on the island that I lived with, everyone had to be pretty well behaved, you know, but to be quite tolerant of each other and very inclusive. And I really loved that community. It was a very, very positive experience for me. I loved living there.
Your book has a section from your time on Christmas Island, your time sort of in between the two on Cocos Islands,
Yes.
and then the return to the mainland.
Yes.
How do you see each of those periods in your life?
I think my life was completely turned around. It was completely changed by my experiences on the islands. And I even feel emotional as I try and talk about it, because I think what I learnt, especially when I was teaching the older young men, so I was brought up believing certain things about maybe Islamic males, but that was my main job towards the end of my time on Christmas Island, was to work with these 16 and 17-year-old boys from Iran and Afghanistan. And they were so beautiful, and I had to unlearn my prejudices and my assumptions about them. And I could feel my barriers coming down as they shared their lives with me. And I learnt over and over again with each story that I heard, with each connection I formed with each student, I learnt so much about it, what it meant to be a human, and to see the courage and dignity and humour and playfulness with which they lived their lives, even though they were basically imprisoned for having done no wrong, as it is legal to seek asylum in Australia. I think it made me rethink a lot of my attitudes. And there's a beautiful quote, it's in the beginning of this book by Joanna Macy, and she says, "The heart that breaks open can contain the whole universe." And I think those student stories broke me open, but then it opened me up to the world and other people. And even though I felt so much grief and sadness, my capacity for love and connection and joy grew after my time there.
So what was it like for you to come back to the mainland? Was that a really huge adjustment to make?
Yes, it was massive. I remember going to a gallery opening at Fremantle Arts Centre, and I had to go home because there were only 90 people on my island, and suddenly I was surrounded by a couple of hundred people, and I just couldn't get used to it, and it took me a little while to acclimatise being back in the city. But I loved it as well. So there wasn't a huge arts community out on the island, so to be back around other poets and writers and artists has been so stimulating. I've just loved it. But interestingly, both my husband and I reached a point where we missed those wild spaces. So I think they had a huge impact on us, and I think that's what has made our journey back to Denmark and wanting to be back in a wild place again.